When we set out to get into the head of former Fed Reserve Chairman Alan Greenspan, we never imagined the journey would take us into the underwear drawers of America. Turns out you can tell a lot about the state of the country's economy by the state of men's underpants. At least that's what Alan Greenspan seems to think. Mr. Greenspan released a 500-plus page book in September called The Age of Turbulence, Adventures in a New World. He analyzed, dished about, and explained the events that made up his time as Fed chairman. But it wasn't the first time he'd been revealing to the press. NPR's esteemed science correspondent, Robert Krulwich, who in his former life was an economic correspondent for NPR, CBS, and ABC, spent some quality time with Mr. Greenspan. And the BPP's Luke Burbank and I spend some quality time with Mr. Krulwich getting the lowdown. So, Robert, what is the one thing that Alan Greenspan seems to understand about economics that others don't?
I loved that he had this place, Townsend Greenspan. It was on the east side. It was just one of those, it looked kind of like an insurance company or something. But what he would do is he would keep his ear as low to the ground, trying to figure out what he just told John. What are people really up to? So the kinds of ways he'd do this is he would look, say, at dry cleaning sales, because he thought people who send their clothes to dry cleaning are doing something slightly luxurious. I mean, you could do it in the laundry. So when you're feeling good, you send a few extra shirts to dry cleaning. So he took the dry cleaning stats very, very seriously. And I remember once we were talking, and I love the drywall. He was interested in drywall because that would mean people doing a lot of home improvements, how many trucks are on the road. But men's underpants was the one that really got to me. He once told me that if you think about all the garments in a household, the garment that is most private is the male underpant, because nobody sees it except people like in the locker room, and who cares? Your children need clothes. Your wife needs clothes that have to change. The children grow. You need clothes on the outside. Mm-hmm. But the last purchase that you don't have to make is underpants. You get a hole in your underpants.
We will wear those things until they're in complete tatters.
Total tatters.
Yes, what is with you men in that?
So,
ask Alan Greenspan.
So he would look, if you look at the sales of male underpants, it's just pretty much a flat line. It hardly ever changes. But on those few occasions where it dips, that means that men are so pinched that they are deciding not to replace underpants. And he said that is almost always a prescient sort of forward example of here comes trouble. And so he said, but notice that the dip in male underpants is very, very small. And I think, wow. You know, it's not that he was right or wrong. It was just, I just loved the way he would sneak around human behavior by like looking at things like that.
It's interesting. They don't teach a course in the London School of Economics about charting male underpants, yet Alan Greenspan figured this out.
Well, so what do you say to John? It's like people are greedy, fearful, and pretty much deeply mysterious and quite crazy. And so but there is a sort of a science that say if you put enough of them in a pot, you can tell some stuff about an economy. So he would put various attitudes of humans in a pot and study them like an oracle. And to give him his due, he was pretty close to right much of the time.
He was sort of known for his cryptic but telling comments. Everybody remembers irrational exuberance in the 90s to describe the stock market there. Do you think he used language effectively?
Yeah, because he's such a good storyteller. I mean, he's absolutely a great storyteller. And he could keep me spellbound in the room. And then he gets this fancy job as a central banker. And suddenly he can't say how, you know, the street was crossed by me would be kind of a clear version of it. He never say I crossed the street. And he would actually say the whole traversing of the large estuary was mostly accomplished by people. That would have been bipedally, if you'll get my drift. And you didn't know what he was talking about. But that was a guy who knew how to talk and chose not to.
Do you think that killed him?
No. You understand that the job he held, the job that central bankers around the world held, going to your issue about why are people so polite, this is an enormously powerful job. If I raise the price of how much it costs you to borrow, that's all the kids who want to go to college are now going to have to pay more. All the farmers who want to buy seed are now going to have to pay more. All of the people who want to buy wall-to-wall carpets are going to have to pay more. I have just imposed an enormous tax on everybody. Now, who elects the head of the Federal Reserve? Nobody.
But he gets to stick around for a really long time.
Longer than a president. In a democratic society, the Germans, the Americans, the Canadians, the British have created this role that is sort of separate from politics of an independent person, beholden to no one, who can take an enormous amount of money from people who have some and give it to people who don't, or take an enormous amount of money from people who are borrowing and give it to the lenders. This is in a very odd situation. And because countries need to be able to handle money, they have essentially established a sensitive little place off in the corner where powerful people can work outside the normal responsibilities of politics. The central bankers understand that, and they're probably a little PO'd at Alan Greenspan for taking on political leaders in such a raw way. But the political leaders are also aware that they don't want to have to raise and lower taxes enormously on people, so they let these people alone. So when you talk about Cheney being careful and tiptoeing, he's tiptoeing around a central banker as much as he's tiptoeing around a guy who actually was his buddy.
Well, that's my next question. Didn't he break some sort of code of the covenant? These folks usually don't speak so bluntly, as in, the Bush administration did this the wrong way. These people deserve to lose in this election. Those words coming out of Alan Greenspan seemed a little shocking.
I think that Bernanke and Volcker, his predecessor, those are the Americans, and the German guy and the British guy and the Japanese guy are thinking, why did he do that? We all live out. We're not supposed to kick these guys, and they don't kick us. So there was a little kick thing going on.
I was wondering, you mentioned Ben Bernanke, and I don't want to take it off of Alan Greenspan, but I mean, is there going to be a cult of Ben Bernanke someday, or is it something, aside from just his tracking of underwear patterns, something constitutionally about Alan Greenspan that made him this interesting guy to us?
No. He's just the one that we've heard most recently. The one before him, Paul Volcker, was tall, smoked big cigars, and had the same strange mythic, because he was so tall. Strange mythic quality. There's some no. The job creates the mystique. Not. I don't think Alan Greenspan in particular. Except he had such a long run, so you know he's the only. It's like when I was growing up, President Eisenhower. I thought was the name of the job. I didn't know that.
My mom used to say that about Roosevelt. She's like, I didn't know any other president besides Roosevelt.
So that was the only one I knew.
The Greenspan haters are out. It's not just all golf claps around whenever Alan Greenspan walks into a room. A lot of people, Paul Krugman in the New York Times, saying, hey, you were there. You could have done something about this fiscal irresponsibility if you were so concerned. Does he deserve some of this criticism? As a reporter?
As a reporter? Yeah, I think it's fair to say that when you have, you know, Tina and Billy going to borrow money for a house, you say, who are Tina and Billy? Well, she's 21, he's 23. They've just not missed one payment on the car, but only one. They still have student loans to pay. What do they want to do? They want to buy a $300,000 and get a loan for $300,000. And they're going to get it? And she's pregnant? I mean, this doesn't look like a solid loan. In fact, this almost looks, as Alan said, a little bit like somebody got them so excited about the house that they just wanted to snatch their money, their mortgage payments, and run off with them. And there is something really vile about what was going on in America for the last 6 or 7 years. People who really wanted to live in houses were buying houses way out of their league, and it was pretty clear they weren't going to be able to pay for them. And people were urging them to do it. And I think that the head of the Federal Reserve, watching it go on everywhere, and you all know those strange loan arrangements that were being made, that was a very, very serious bit of leading people, innocent people, to slaughter. And now we have all these problems. But they were very, very foreseeable. I mean, if a guy's going to be good at telling the future, this is almost like a fact. You know, you give that kind of money to people who are that poor and that new in the market, you're going to get trouble.
That really surprised me about him, because he was so famous for talking about irrational exuberance and being such a sort of careful guy. But when I bought my house, I mean, I was amazed at, when I went in there, how easily – I mean, everyone gets paid off when you buy a house, the mortgage broker, all the way down the line. And they're just – it felt to me like it was kind of a land grab. And I thought, Alan Greenspan's a conservative guy, and this is all going on his watch. It just doesn't surprise me.
And the classic movie version, I think, of Spencer Tracy and Kate Hepburn sitting in Westchester, they bought a house in one of those movies. And it's been 30 years. They've had the house together. They're now an old couple, and they have a ceremonial burning of the IOU, of the mortgage, because it's such an achievement to have done this very careful, very special, very dutiful, very serious thing. And then you get under Greenspan's reign, you get people just like, here, take $300. You want $400? You want $500? You can have it.
I haven't actually paid my car bill.
Never mind. That kind of thing.
By the way, don't burn the mortgage. That's an old wives' tale. You should do that, just, or at least make a copy if you're going to do
okay.
it. Before we let you go, we got about a minute left. Greenspan is soft-spoken. You know, he stood his ground with Leslie Stahl there.
Yes.
Andrea probably helped him practice. Yeah. In the times that you've interviewed him, was it ever combative? Was it? Did you get in good debates? Was he willing to engage?
One time I was doing something for NPR, and I was waving my microphone around, and I accidentally hit a glass bowl on his table. And the bowl shattered, and I looked in it and it said, in what remained of the bowl, a gift to Alan Greenspan from the King of Finland.
Oh, no.
And I looked at him, and I said, oh, gee. So I went to Pottery Barn, and I got him a replacement bowl. Which is really kind of, it was sort of glass. I think I had a little plastic in it. And I brought it to him, and I wrote, you know, in the bottom, I said, from the Prince of Finland. And my wife said, that was really, really stupid. I mean,
did he laugh when you gave it to him?
I can't remember.
Or did you just leave it at his
office?
I think
I was afraid to face him, yeah. Yeah.
So that's as rough as it got.
I mean, but you know, if a guy who has a bowl from the King of Finland, maybe you should put it in off safely on a wall. Because, you know, the NPR people are very aggressive, very truth-seeking, and we hit you with our microphone.
That was NPR science correspondent Robert Krulwich, former economics correspondent for NPR, CBS, and ABC, and self-proclaimed Prince of Finland. And very good friend to the Bryant Park Project.
Yes, indeed. Yes, he is.
You want to explain why Robert is so important to our show, producer Matt Martinez? This is your wheelhouse.
You know, we try to put together the best show possible every day and the tightest show possible. And we try to make sure that things don't blow up while the show is on the air.
We're very live.
Most of what you're hearing is happening as it's happening. And sometimes guests don't show up. Their phone line poops out. And so we have to go to what we call an emergency Krulwich. We always have a Robert Krulwich piece in the can, ready to go, ready to deploy, because they're brilliant and they're wonderful and they can be used at any time.
And we have a big white erase board in our work area that counts the number of days when we've not had to deploy the emergency Krulwich.
If we get through today, it will be 14 days since we last deployed an emergency Krulwich. Now, we purposefully deployed a Robert Krulwich on Christmas.
We did.
So we're not counting that. But 14 days since we had to deploy any emergency Krulwich.
So thank you, Robert Krulwich, for all the work you do on several different levels. A little behind-the-scenes look at what goes on here at the BPP. Coming up on this show today, when beauty contestants speak, and the fine minds of the BPP actually unscramble the words of Miss Teen South Carolina. We also have the smooth sounds of NPR fan and Bryant Park musical guest Ben Harper. That's coming up on the BPP from NPR News.